Hi folks, I'm Buzz and I'm an alcoholic. And today we're going to do step three. This is entirely my experience. And it's my experience probably combined with the little knowledge that I've gained through working the steps in my life. Actually, my experience is the only thing that I have that's worth anything. I do have an ego, and if I start to preach or teach, just ignore it, because it's my ego coming out. The steps actually say very little about alcohol. And being very honest, I've known a lot of people that have stayed sober longer than I have that have never worked the steps. And I mean, they do. They say the only time alcohol is even mentioned is in the beginning, in step one. We are powerless over alcohol. The rest, Bill Wilson said the steps are designed for living, and they are. Whether you drink or not, they'd be a good design for living for any. It's kind of a racial thing. If you're part of the human race, the steps would help you. The steps are numbered, each of them one. The step leads to the next one. And I believe that I have to have a little understanding of one before I could move on to the next one, because the next one made no sense. In other words, I had to kind of understand a little bit about step one before I could move on to step two. And a little more, I had to have some understanding of step two before I could move on to step three. And please don't get me wrong, I don't think you have to, or I don't think I ever will understand them completely. So you don't have to understand them before you move on. There's an old saying, more will be revealed. And as you work the steps throughout your tenure here, you'll learn more. At least I have. And by now, I've practiced these steps for a while. My life is, I'm as old as I've ever been, and I'm as happy and free as I've ever been. But by now I know very little about anything. I think the more I know, the more I know I don't know. I'll calm down in a minute. Step one, I'm just going to review this a little. That's where I accepted I was powerless, and I established that my life was unmanageable. And that was pretty easy, as long as I was drinking and drugging. I could see how things were unmanageable. And I'm going to allude to this later, that I really had the illusion that once I got sober, I would be able to manage my own life. And I actually tried it. I'm going to talk about that tonight. Step two, I did not believe in God when I got to step two, but I came to believe that AA was a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. In other words, I'd go to AA. There was many times that in the beginning I promised myself I could drink that night after the AA meeting, because that would get me through the day. And after the AA meeting, I never wanted to drink. So that was actually restoring me to sanity. I believe that AA was a God-given power that for us drunks. That's step one and two. And you know, we have questions at the end, but right now, before we move on, does anybody have any questions about step one or two? Okay, good. We'll move on to step three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Now, I said before, but I'll restate it. When I came in, I didn't believe in God. I think I was pretty much agnostic. I used to tell people I was an atheist, but I don't think I was an atheist. I think I was just afraid of God because of this childhood God that was going to beat me up and throw me in a lake of fire for things I did, and I did a lot of things that I shouldn't have done. Now, I kind of established step one and step two. They were pretty well ingrained. And then a tragedy struck my life personally. I had a sponsor named Big Jim. And Big Jim played basketball for Syracuse way back. He was a good, and he was 6'7". He was big. And he was playing basketball at the Y. 49 years old, and he died of a heart attack right there. Unexpected. And this threw my life for a loop. My life personally and my sobriety life. And I think it was the first time I ever really grieved over losing a human being. And I had Jim on such a pedestal that I didn't replace him. I didn't replace him for 3 years. And there's a saying in AA, if you're your own sponsor, you have an idiot for a sponsor. Well, I had an idiot for a sponsor for 3 years. Now, what happened was I didn't replace Big Jim. And you know that manageability thing? I got back in the driver's seat. And in a way, Big Jim was kind of part of the power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And he was a powerful influence on my life. And all of a sudden that was taken away, and nobody could fill his shoes in my mind. So I didn't get another sponsor. And I thought, I'm okay, I can handle this. I'm sober now, I'm 2 years sober. I know it all. Now, I still connected with AA. I went to meetings. I went to a lot of meetings. I even sponsored a couple people. Probably owe them amends for that. But I went to a lot of meetings, but I gradually started to slip away from the program. Now, today, when somebody says they had a slip, that means they went out and got drunk. But originally, I think it was Wilson that coined the phrase slip, because he started slipping away from the program. And that's what I did. And it says, if you read page 60 through 63, it says, any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And that's what I was doing. I was running the show. I was doing it my way. I was the power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And it didn't work. And it didn't just all of a sudden not work. It was a slow, gradual spiral downward. As I slipped away from the program, I started getting more and more controlling. It manifested in the people closest to me. I was a single parent to two young teenage daughters. And I started getting restless and irritable with them. My sponsees, I started getting restless and irritable. The people closest to me first. Then I started getting restless and irritable with the people in AA. See, I knew more about it than they did. I stuttered when I said humility, and I was running things, and it didn't work. And finally, there's a lot of names for it. There's relapse dynamic, stinking thinking, dry drunk. There's a lot of different names for it, but basically what it is I was headed back towards that first drink. I think God intervened, or I blew up, and I blew up in AA, alienated half the people, tried to pick a fight with a guy that was twice my size, and just for the grace of God, he didn't fight me, you know, but that was good. It my life wasn't working. My two daughters rebelled. I lost 21 pounds in a little over a week. I was chewing snuff, and caffeine was my coffee, and snuff was about the only nutrition I was putting into my body. And it just it went bad. My one daughter ran away one night, and I thought she was maybe abducted. I was thinking the worst, and I had the fire department out and the police out, and we found her. Her and another girl had run away and hid in a culvert pipe, you know, a big culvert pipe. They were going to live there. But she was about 12. That was my youngest daughter. And I just broke down that night. And when I needed love and understanding the most, I deserved it the least. And I even pissed off a whole lot of people in the program. And I was 5 years sober. And I'll get back to this, but it was a good thing. I went out, and I used to call my motorcycle my six-pack, and I was riding down a back road. It was a dirt road. I was going too fast. I knew it. There was a curb down there that I couldn't take at that speed, and I knew that, but I just wasn't thinking about it, and I kind of plowed up about half a row of potatoes with my shoulder, totaled the motorcycle, but I really miraculously didn't get hurt. I got up. I couldn't ride the motorcycle back. I had to walk about 7 miles, and it was in late October, and it was cold that night. And you know, I love to hike, but motorcycle boots just ain't made for walking, you know, 7 miles in the middle of the night. And I got home, and I kind of realized some of this that had happened, that I couldn't do this on my own. I called up a man named Gallagher, and Pat said he's here sometimes, but he said he wasn't coming tonight because he heard this story. But Gallagher was my sponsor, and he was a very wise man, but he wasn't well liked. Pat didn't like him. I think I'm the only one in the whole county that liked him, but I did like him. And he taught me a lot, and he had a lot of wisdom, and he was kind of socially abrasive, and he wasn't afraid to speak what was on his mind. And I asked him to be my sponsor, and he was a good sponsor. He came over at 2 o'clock in the morning. He says, "I'll buy you a drink." We went into Perkins, and he bought me a cup of coffee, and we sat there drinking coffee the rest of the night and talking. And you know, when I was done, even though I hadn't slept that night, my life was totally unmanageable and disarray from the dry drunk, but I felt better because I'd reached out, and I kind of put my life in the hands of somebody other than myself. And Gallagher probably wasn't a good role model to follow, but I was still kind of defiant towards God. No, I wasn't kind of defiant. I was defiant towards God. I hadn't accepted that yet. I hadn't thought about it. And later on, you're going to see one of my grosser handicaps is I'm rebellious and defiant. And so anyway, I started meeting with Gallagher. And I had done a primitive four-step with Big Jim, but it was more or less a laundry list of all the crappy things I did, and the fifth step was kind of like a confession, and it was pretty primitive by today's standards, but it had some value. And then after we were done as a ritual, we burned it, and I really wished I wouldn't have burned that. So today, because I'd like to have it today. I remember some of the stuff was on it, but there was a lot of stuff I don't remember. Probably some of it was a lie, or at least it was minimized what I did, you know, because I wanted to impress Big Jim. And so I met with Gallagher, and we talked about that. And he says, "What about step three?" I says, "Well, I don't believe in God." He says, "Read it to me." And so I read it. literally, right out of the book, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood Him. And he says, what does that mean to you? And I says, that means I have to turn my will and my life over to some mystical character that's like Santa Claus, and I don't believe he exists. He says, it doesn't say that at all. What do you mean? Read it again. So I read it again. What's it say? And I said about the same thing. And he was a little abrasive because he said, you know, you're as dumb as you look. And I read it again. By now, you know, Big Jim was so big I couldn't even outrun him. And it's like, I think God made him big on purpose, you know, because I didn't give him much static. But this guy was my size. I got my weight back. I'm the veteran of a lot of barroom brawls. And I thought, I'm going to handle this guy, you know. I think I can handle him. And I was about to. And I think he knew that. And he said, okay, read it one more time. And I'm there, okay. Made a decision. He says, stop right there. He says, that's step three in a nutshell. You make a decision here. And I'm kind of puzzled and I'm looking at him, but I've been doing some bear hunting. And he says, could you and me make a decision to go bear hunting right now? Yeah, I guess we could, you know. There's not much to make it a decision. He says, that's right. He said, could we go bear hunting right now? And I said, well, no. And he said, well, why? I says, because we're not ready. He says, you're not ready here. If we were going to go to bear hunting, what do we have to do? I says, well, we have to do some things first. He says, like what? I said, well, we'd have to get some information, we'd have to save some money, get some vacation, bear licenses, outfitter. He says, exactly, we have to do some things first. And that is where we're at. You have to do some things first. He says, okay, you got it now. That's step three. He says, I want you to think about that, and I want you to do a little research on this God thing that you don't believe in. I want you to read a chapter that I thought right then they wrote it in a big book just for me, and actually the big book was written way before I was born. He says, I want you to read the chapter called We Agnostics. Okay. And I did some thinking, and I quoted this off of page 47. I quoted more than this, but just this one sentence I quoted here either last week or the week before. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, there's a power greater than myself? And I'd already established in step two that AA was the power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, because if you were here that night, I wanted to go drinking, and an old timer by the name of Neil talked me into going to the meeting before I went drinking. And I didn't tell him I wanted to go drinking. I told him I was going to see a girlfriend. The girl's name was Miss Southern Comfort. I went to the meeting and I listened to a lead. And it was stupid to go drinking after I heard the lead. You see, before the lead, I had tunnel vision. All I could see was this little feeling. When you drink that double shot, you down it, and immediately it's... That's all I could see. And it was like looking through a pipe. And I used to do this with my sponsees. I'd have them roll up a piece of paper and look at my face, just my face. And I'd be smiling. And then I'd say, take the paper away. I got a gun, I'm going to shoot you, but I'm smiling. But all they could see was me smiling. And that's what it was. I was looking at alcohol, and Miss Southern Comfort was smiling. And this guy let me see the whole picture. And she had a gun. She was going to shoot me. I've been shot with that gun. I know that, you know. And anyway, so, but God, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm reading this chapter, and it says, if a man could say yes to even this simple question, he's on his way. And I could say yes to that simple question. And then, I read the chapter, and I started thinking about it. And I mean, I'd been going to meetings for 5 years. I knew a lot of people, and there was a lot of people that I didn't think much of their sobriety. There's a lot of people I didn't even believe were sober that were saying they were sober. And who knows, maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But the people, the men and women that I admired, had one common thread weaving through all of them, and that was a strong belief in God. And, you know, I had two things that were right fresh in my mind, realistic. And one was, I had 3 years of doing it on my own, my way. I was in control. I was the higher power. And that did not work. And that was fresh in my mind because it really did not work. And the other thing that was fresh in my mind, and it always has been and it is today, the one thing I got from AA right from my first meeting was a lot of hope, because you could see it working in others. Even if it wasn't working in me, I could see it working with you. I used to be jealous at times. How come it works for them and not me? And it's because I... and probably a lot of the reason was I didn't believe in God, to be honest with you. I thought I was the highest thing on the food chain. Chaz is laughing there, but he knew me in these days. he was sober too. But anyway, and I noticed that, and I thought, there does have to be something to it. Now, several years before, I admitted there was a power greater than myself, and see, that was the beginning. That was, you know, I use it in my yard. There's a white oak tree that I think I could take me and two other guys about the size of Chaz, and if we stretched our arms, I doubt if the three of us could reach around it. But you see, that big white oak tree, you couldn't knock it down with a cannon right now. But at one time, probably when George Washington was coming up the creek, you could have pulled that seedling right out of the ground with your hands. See, it wasn't always that way. And for me, this God thing had started to grow. And another thing that hit me was, you know, we read on How It Works this morning, or just before the meeting here this evening. And after that, page 60 through 63 somewhere, and I jotted it down. I don't know if it's exactly a quote, but it says something real close to this. Most people try to live on self-propulsion. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody. And that's, you know, I was sober, but asking some guy that's more than twice your size to fight wasn't a real sane thing, you know, even though I was sober. It was, and Smokey used to say, was an old timer, he said, he's deceased now, but he used to say, you know, when you stop drinking, you're supposed to stop stealing horses. Well, see, I'm 5 years sober, and I went back to stealing horses. And it was, a dry drug is about like a wet drunk. You get restless, irritable, and discontent, but you don't have the luxury of that from the Southern comfort, you know. Now, I came to understand that my life was unmanageable by me. But I thought I could manage it after I quit drinking. And what I had to do in those 3 years was I look now at it, even though it was very painful, I look at it as a gift. Because I got that gift of knowing for sure. It was almost like the second surrender of 5 years sober. I realized I could not do it without you. But that was the bad news. The good news is I've been sober a long time. And I've never had to do it without you. So I met with Gallagher again. And the only answer was to turn my life over to God to manage my life through AA. And I think AA was a divine gift to drunks like me. If you're drunk like me, I'd have died there. I'd have been dead years ago if it wasn't for AA. Okay? And I thank God, you know, I like what Father Martin said. Father Martin was a Catholic priest, but he was also sober more than half his life. He had great wisdom. I have him on a pedestal. He had Father Martin's Ashley. I think it's in Maryland. I've never been there. And I had the pleasure of meeting this gentleman, you know, a little Irishman, Spitfire, but he was an alcoholic. And he said, on film I saw this, he said, somebody once asked him if prayer would work for a toothache. And he said, yeah. It works best, though, if it's said while you're sitting in a dentist chair with your mouth open. And I'm going to refer to that again later, but God gives us a lot of gifts, and He does a lot of things for us. And I think He gave us dentists for bad teeth. I think He gave us doctors for broken bones. But He gave us Alcoholics Anonymous for alcoholism. And it's kind of up to us to use it. You know, there was a couple from Cockerton one time that was charged. They were very religious, and it was a strict religion, and their daughter had appendicitis. And they wouldn't take her to the doctor. They prayed for God's will, and the daughter died, and they charged them. They charged them for, it wasn't murder or anything, it was like a neglect thing. And the thing is, if your daughter has appendicitis, absolutely pray for her on the way to the doctors. Take her to the hospital. Pray for the surgeon while she's in there. Prayer works, but we have to do some footwork. And that's what I had to do. And I went to Gallagher and I said, okay, I made a decision. And if we made a decision to go bear hunting, we have to do some things. What do I have to do to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? And it's kind of simple. In step three, you don't turn your will and your life over to the care of God. You make a decision to do that. You have to do some things first, like step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And 10. Some people will say 4 through 9, but I say 4 through 10. Because in step 11, and I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I'll come back when we get to step 11. In step 11, it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for His will for us and the power to carry that out. That's the surrender. I like, I'm kind of a fan of Joe McHugh and the steps we took. I think it's a great book. I've taken the class several times and I teach it right out of Joe McHugh a lot of times with my sponsees. And he says, there's three frogs sitting on a log and one of them makes a decision to jump. How many are left on the log? And somebody always say two, and he says, no, three. Because he just made a decision. He didn't jump. But when that frog jumps off the log, you hear the splash in step 11. So we have to do steps 4 through 10. And then I kind of realized that when Gallagher, and I said, let's get to it. This ought to take a month, and then things will be, you know, that fairy tales, something happens and they always live happily ever after. Well, I always wanted that, but that's a fairy tale. It's not life. Now, I have a problem because I really, you know, when I made that decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God, I was sincere, but I didn't count on something. That's the resurgence of my ego. And I do have an ego, and it comes back, and actually it kind of manifests in a poor step 10, because I usually pull real close to God and to the program when things are bad. It was like the wind and the sun had an argument. Who could steal this guy's coat? And the wind says, I'm pretty tough. I'll go first. And it blew. And the guy, and he turned the old thermostat down, blew harder. And the guy just, and he blew harder, gale force, and the guy's just holding on for dear life. And finally the wind ran out of air. See, he pulled closer. But the sun says, okay, my turn. And he heated it up. And the clouds went away and the wind died down. He heated it up more. And pretty soon the guy, he's hot. And he takes the coat off. And that's what happens to me. When times are tough and I got alligators up to my neck and shit's deep, man, I go to meetings, I talk to my sponsor, I talk to my sponsees, I use the phone, I use the literature, the daily meditations diligently, and it works. And finally it's like, thank you, God, for helping me. Man, things are really starting to get better. You know? Well, I guess I don't need this for a while. And I would. Now, don't get scared, Chaz. I'm not going to strip. Scooter's over there. She's just flinching because she doesn't know how far I'm going to go with this. Be honest with you, I didn't think about this till right now, but I'm not going much farther. But anyway, this is what I'm trying to, and I'm kind of, we're not a glum lot, I'm trying to, but the thing is, to be honest with you, I have never got down on my knees and said, God, you're messing up, you're screwing up, I'm going to handle this from here. I've never done that. And I kind of doubt if I ever will. But the thing is, the resurgence of my ego. And sometimes it's almost like my own self-will, my ego, is my enemy. We know about that. And I start reverting back to the old ways because I get comfortable. And then pretty soon, I'm taking over. Move over, God. You get in the passenger seat. I can handle this. And guess what? I can't. And I thought, you know, I didn't think much of the Bible for a long time. And then I started reading it. And I didn't think much of Paul, the apostle. You know, Paul. I thought, there's a guy that needs to get his ass to some Al-Anon meetings is what I thought, you know. But anyway, and I'm reading in Romans, I think it's either 7 or 14, about him doing the same thing. He's struggling with his ego. He says, I know this is wrong. Why do I do that? Just because I know something doesn't mean I won't do it. And he would know something and then he would go back. And see, it's the same way with me. I know I shouldn't do this. And I'm not stupid, and I don't think I have Alzheimer's yet, although sometimes I wonder. I forget what, I'll go downstairs for something twice and forget what I went down for both times. But I really, you know, I mean, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I am in the drawer. And why do I keep doing stuff that I know better? I think that's a racial thing, part of the human race. You know, it's, we go back, we revert back. And that's why, you know, I keep coming to AA. Am I getting too, okay. When I see people starting to look at the clock, I think maybe it's time to be quiet, Liz. I've got to go on just for a minute here. But what happens is I know better, but I can't do it on my own. And that's why I keep going back to AA. In fact, AA is my medicine. I don't have to shoot it like the diabetic has to shoot insulin or take a pill like the... Actually, I take a pill for cholesterol, but, you know, in fact, that's a good example. When I first started taking this pill because my cholesterol was high, I said, Doc, how long do I have to take this pill? He says, depends. How long do you want to live? If you don't want to live long, don't take the pill. You know? Well, that was 15 or 20 years ago. I still take the pill. And that's the same way with AA. How long should I go to AA? How long do I want to stay sober? And I love living sober. I love this way of life. I can't work the program perfect because I have this, you know, where, you know, it gets pretty cold and I cling to my coat. I get rough times, I go to AA. And I when it gets better, I take the coat off. And the thing is, I thank God that I have AA to go to. And I've seen it happen so many times when people come in and they'll stay sometimes quite a while and they quit going to AA. And the next thing, you know, I used to work in the jail. Next thing I know, I'd see them in jail, you know. And I thought they were sober, you know. But anyway, that's what I have on step three. I hope it was clear. It made sense when I rehearsed it earlier today. Now that I'm in front of you people, I don't know. I wish I knew what I said. We have a question and answer for brief time. Are there any questions?
Anyone?
Kevin's my guy.
Yeah. You guys are unbelievable. 42 of you. Nobody
There's
came up with a
question. There's 42 people out there? Huh? Jeez, if I'd have known that, I'd have been more nervous.
We could charge more. Anyway, thank you again for coming all this
way. Oh, Jesus. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
You know, it is. It's absolutely terrific for you to share your experience, strength, and hope here. When you're working with people and... You know, you take them through the first two steps and you come to that decision part and they're hesitant to do that because they kind of read ahead and say, if I drag my feet here, I don't have to do the other things. So how do you guide them through those first three steps to set them up for the stuff that we're going to be talking about next week?
That's a great question. And the truth is, I don't. And I don't think anybody can. We have, this is Bill Wilson's, and I'm paraphrasing it. He says, we have two ultimate authorities. We have a loving God, as we understand him, that says, do my will, and I'll let you live happy, joyous, and free. And yet, that's the benign power. The malign is John Barleycorn. And he says, do God's will or I'll kill your ass. And the thing is, he does. And like me, I had my first two sponsors. Actually, every sponsor I ever had was a great sponsor. But my first two sponsors did a great job, but I had to learn it on my own. And Wilson, in the 12 and 12, calls alcohol, the only time I ever heard him call it a name, he says, John Barleycorn is our best advocate. And the thing is, my job as a sponsor is to tell the truth, and then I let God and John Barleycorn make the decisions. And to tell you the truth, I've had sponsees that didn't make it, you know, and I've had sponsees that do, and I don't have anything to do with it as a sponsor. I'm just a messenger. I stay out of it. I don't give advice. I don't try to control it. Unless my ego gets in the way. One sponsee, I broke his eardrum one time, Larry. Yeah, I 12-stepped his ass, man. I'll tell you that. That was years and years ago. Fuzzy Ted, if you remember Fuzzy Ted. Yeah. He was a wrestler. I was a street fighter. He didn't stand a chance. Thanks. Good question.
How do you catch yourself if your will is taken over and it's not God's will anymore?
How do I catch myself?
And what do you do, you know, like this?
Usually I don't catch myself. What happens is the pain gets so bad I can't handle it anymore. And I cry out for help. And what I do really is back to basics. And our basics are real simple. Reach out. Reach out to something outside yourself. Whether it's any, get your cell phone, you got numbers, you call people. And it takes some humility to call and say you're in trouble. I was 27 years sober and I just completed a major life goal. And afterwards, I rested on my laurels because I thought, it can't get any better than this. It was literally a mountaintop experience. And I crashed. And at 27 years sober, it took a lot of humility because I thought, if I go to these people, most of them had less sobriety than me, and tell them I'm in trouble, how are they going to feel? How are they going to feel towards me? And will it rob the hope from them? Because they're 5 years sober and they're thinking, there's a guy with 27 years sober and his life sucks. But that's what you have to do. You have to reach out. And you don't have to worry about catching yourself. The pain will let you know. That's all I can say. When I'm in pain, I'm not working my program. When I'm not happy, joyous, and free, it's all about me. And it's self-will. It's not God's will. And that's a good thing, too. If it's about you, it's not about God's will. Because when it's about God's will, it's helping somebody else. Okay. Did that kind of answer? Yeah, you'll know. I guarantee it. And you have a good sponsor there, I take it. And you'll be all right. Yeah, I love her, too. Everybody does.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Next week, it's a dreaded step 4.
Maybe even I won't come.